Continue to meditate upon these spiritual things, and pray to the Father, and you will realize a great increase in the possession of this love and in your condition that will enable us to come in closer rapport with you. Well, I will do as you suggest, and am pleased that you feel as you say, for we must do the work as rapidly as possible. We have lost much time and will have to work the harder to bring about the completion of our delivery of the truths. But you need not fear that we will not be successful. We will complete the book and you will receive the other gifts that are promised you. Only have faith and pray, and all will be well. I must stop now, but before doing so must assure you that I am praying with you in your prayers at night, and that your prayers will be answered. Other spirits will now be able to write you and they have many messages to communicate and all are anxious to do so. Keep up your courage and believe in me and what I tell you. With my love and the blessings of the Father, I will say good night. Your brother and friend, Jesus. I am here, your own true and loving, Helen. Well, my dear husband, I am so glad that the Master has written you, and that the rapport has been re-established so that he can continue the delivery of his messages, for as he said, they, the spirits, are all very anxious to do the work. I was with you tonight and besides me were the Master and your special guardian, John, and we were all watching the impressions made upon your mind by the preachers and saw that what he said, which was contrary to the truths that you have received, made no impression upon your beliefs, except that you desired to be able to tell him of his errors. I will not refer to the occasion further as the Master has written you fully on the subject, and you realize that he corroborates what I said a short 631 time ago in regard to the good that the preacher is doing. I am glad that you are in much better condition of soul and are able to realize more and more the existence of the love in your soul and the fact of your increased nearness to the Father. This makes us all very happy, and we know that you will now be able to do your work with great rapidity and receive therefrom a wonderful happiness. Continue to pray to the Father, and turn your thoughts to these spiritual things, and think of the great responsibility that is resting upon you. I will soon come and write you a real long letter of love, and I know you will feel that love surrounding you in great abundance. Many spirits are here tonight and rejoice that the rapport has been re-established. I love you as you know and want you to love me, and you will not be happier than I when you come into possession of the surroundings that you desire as you so often depict them in your mind's eye. Have faith and you will not be disappointed. And you need not fear the judgment that comes to all men after death. I will not write more now. May you be happier as the days go by. Good night. Your own true and loving, Helen. February 25, 1918. I am here, Jesus, I am here and desire to write a few lines in reference to the great day of judgment, of which the preacher and teachers of theological things write so often. I know that the Bible, or rather some of the books, lay great stress upon this day when, as they claim, God will pour out his vials of wrath upon the ungodly and condemn them to an eternity of punishment. There is, as you know, very great and diverse opinions among these learned men as to what is the meaning and significance of this day of judgment, and when, in a chronological point of view, it will take place, and all these varied opinions have many students and teachers who embrace and proclaim them to the world as being true and free from doubt. Well, it is certain that all men must die and there will come the judgment, and that which follows the death is just as certain as is the death itself, and just as reasonable as is the following of any cause by an effect. So men should have no difficulty in believing in the judgment as a fact that cannot be avoided, just as death cannot be avoided. But the word and the fact, judgment, when used as an effect or following of death, may have, the Paget Messages 1918, many meanings in the opinions and understandings of many men, depending upon what men may believe as to things that are called religious or scientific or philosophical. To the ultra-Orthodox this term judgment means and necessarily comprehends the active pronouncement of a sentence by God, because of and determined by their lives and thoughts while living in the mortal life, irrespective of any of his general laws and the workings thereof. God is himself the judge personal and present, and by him in this capacity are each man's life and works known and digested and made the basis of the sentence that he must pronounce in each individual case. God keeps the record of all of these acts of men, or, if man is conceded to be his own record keeper, his records are, or will be, at the time of the great assemblage for judgment, opened up or brought into view so that nothing can be lost, and then, upon this record men will be sent to eternal happiness or to everlasting punishment, or, as some believe, to destruction or annihilation. Others, not orthodox, who believe in the survival of the soul and the continuing memories of the acts and thoughts of men, teach that the judgment will follow death, as a natural consequence of the operations of the law of cause and effect, and the effect cannot be escaped from, until in some way there comes to the consciousness of men a realization that the effect in their suffering has satisfied the cause and that there is nothing mysterious or unnatural in the appearance and workings of the judgment. They do not believe that God by any special interposition or personal punishing will pronounce the judgment, or determine the merits or demerits of the one called to judgment. Besides these views, there are others extant and believed in, but the two that I have mentioned are principal ones and are sufficient to show what the large majority of thinking or other believing men conclude the term judgment as used in the Bible should mean or be understood to mean. Well, the judgment of the human soul is an important accompaniment of the human life, both in the flesh and in the spirit world, and as regards the questions and punishments, hardly anything demands more of the thought and consideration of men, for it is a certainty that beliefs, true or false, he cannot avoid them. Judgment as certainly follows what men call death, as does night the day, and no philosophy or theological dogmas or scientific determinations can alter the fact, or in any way change the character or exact workings of this judgment. But judgment is not a thing belonging exclusively to the after-death period or condition, for it is present and operating with men from the time that they become incarnated in the human until they become disincarnate, and thereafter continuously until the causes of effects have been satisfied and there remains nothing to be judged, which happy ending is also a fact, for all men are dependent upon their progress towards the conditions of harmony with the laws that make effective as well as pronounce the judgments. While on earth these laws operate, and continuously man is being judged for the causes that he starts into existence, and the after-death judgment is only a continuation of the judgment received by men while on earth. Of course, men may not know this, these judgments or the effects thereof, become more intensified after men have gotten rid of the influences of the flesh existence, and they become spirits, having only the spirit qualities. And because of this fact men must understand and try to realize that the expression after death, the judgment has a greater significance and is of more vital importance than the saying, that judgment is with men all during their mortal lives. After death the causes of the inharmony with the law becomes more pronounced, and appear in the true meaning and force, and, consequently, as this is true the effects become more intensified and understood, and men suffer more and realize the darkness, and sometimes the gross darkness, that these effects produce. The inharmony appears in its unclothed and unhidden reality, and the law's workings bring to men the exact penalties that their violations demand. Man is his own bookkeeper, and in his memory are recorded all the thoughts and deeds of his earth life that are not in accord with the harmony of God's will, which is expressed or manifested by his laws. The judgment is not the thing of a day or a time, but is never ceasing so long as there exists that upon which it can operate, and it diminishes in proportion as the causes of inharmony disappear. God is not present in wrath demanding, as does the human who believes himself to have been injured demanding reparation by the one causing the injury. No, the Father is present only in love, and as the soul of the one undergoing the penalty, which his own deeds and thoughts have imposed, 632, the Paget Messages 1918, upon him, comes more in harmony with the Father's will. He, as you mortals say, is pleased. Never an angry God, rejoicing in the satisfaction of a penalty being paid by one of his erring children, but always a loving father rejoicing in the redemption of his children from a suffering that a violation of the laws of harmony exacts with certitude. Then, as I say, the judgment day is not a special time when all men must meet in the presence of God, and have their thoughts and deeds weighed in the balance, and then, according as they are good or evil, have the sentence of an angry, or even just God pronounced upon them. The judgment day is every day, both in the earth life of man and in life in the spirit, where the law of compensation is working. In the spirit world time is not known and every breathing is a part of eternity and with every breathing so long as the law requires, comes the judgment, continued and unsatisfied, until man, as a spirit, reaches that condition of harmony, so that for him, no longer the law demands a judgment. But from what I have written, men must not suppose, or beguile themselves, into that state of belief that will cause them to think that because there is no special day of judgment when God will pronounce his sentence, the judgment, therefore, is not so much to be dreaded or shunned. No, this state of thinking will palliate, lessen or to try to lessen the seriousness, only for the moment, for the judgment is certain, and is and will be no less to be dreaded, because the immutable law demands exact restoration instead of an angry God. No man who has lived and died has escaped, and no man who shall hereafter die can escape this judgment unless he has, in a way provided by the Father in his love, become in harmony with the laws requiring harmony. As a man soweth, so shall he reap is as true as is the fact that the sun shines upon the just and the unjust alike. Memory is man's storehouse of good and evil, and memory does not die with the death of the man's physical body, but on the contrary, becomes more alive, all alive, and nothing is left behind or forgotten when the spirit man casts off the encumbrance and the benumbing and deceiving influences of the only body of man that was created to die. Judgment is real, and men must come to it face to face, and want of belief or unbelief or indifference or the application to men's lives of the saying sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof 633, will not enable men to avoid the judgment or the exactions of its demands. There is a way, though, in which men may turn the judgment of death into the judgment of life, in harmony into harmony, suffering into happiness, and judgment itself into a thing to be desired. Elsewhere we have written of this way open to all men, and I will not attempt to describe it here. I have written enough for tonight. You are tired and must not be drawn on further. So with my love I will say good night. Your brother and friend, Jesus. March 2, 1918. I am here, John. I will not write now, except to say that your spiritual condition is much improved and you are advancing in your soul perceptions of the truth and of the reality of the Father and his love. Question: Yes, I know, but you must remember two things with reference to the writings in the Bible ascribed to me, namely, first, that many of the sayings therein contained, I did not write or authorize to be written, and, secondly, that at the time I lived on earth and wrote, my knowledge of the truth and of God was not so great or so correct as it is now. I realize that some things I then believed and taught, were not in accord with the truth as I now know it to be, even my conception of Jesus and his mission on earth, and his return to earth, was not true. Then, although I was a close companion of the Master and had many lessons of instructions from him, I was a quite ignorant man and did not grasp the spiritual meanings of his teachings, and up to the time of my decease, my beliefs were more colored by things of the material than by those of the spiritual. For instance, I, as did the other disciples, supposed that he was coming to earth again in a short time at any unexpected time, and set up his kingdom on earth. Now, this is a fact, notwithstanding that he had said that his kingdom would be a spiritual kingdom, though existing on earth. I could not dissociate from my conception of the establishment and existence of this kingdom, the idea that in some way it would be an actual, visible kingdom in which the Master would be the king, and rule as other kings ruled, except it would be a rule of righteousness. All this may seem a little strange to you. But if you will consider for a moment that my teachings as a Jew are to the effect that when the Messiah, the Paget Messages 1918, came, he would actually rule on earth as a king, you will understand how difficult it was for me to get the idea, or make the distinction between that kind of kingdom and one which would be purely spiritual. At some time, I will write you more fully on this matter, for I realize its importance, as many, yes, a majority of the professed Christians, now believe that Jesus, at some time, will come to earth and establish a material kingdom and rule all the nations of the earth, and some of these enthusiastic Christians believe that they will be of the elect, and become princes and sub-rulers in that kingdom, as material men called by the resurrection to again become the human, although glorified, as some of them express their faith. Well, they will be disappointed, for when they shall have passed from the mortal to the spirit, they will forever remain spirits, and the only kingdom that they will live in thereafter will be a spirit kingdom, and that, whether the kingdom of the restored man or of the divine angel, will not be on the earth. I must stop now. So pray to the Father and strive for a deeper and more abiding faith, and you will realize the truth and this experience. Good night. Your brother in Christ, John. March 3, 1918. I am here, Jesus. I desire tonight to write you in reference to the way in which, as the preacher advises, Christ may be in you. I know that it is almost universal among preachers of the Orthodox Church to teach their hearers that the way to salvation is to get Christ in them, and thereby they will be enabled to come into unity with the Father, and cease to remain subject to the effects of sin and evil. Well, this teaching is the true foundation of salvation for the celestial heavens, provided it be understood by the preachers and the people what the true meaning of Christ in you is. And unless this meaning be comprehended, the fact that preacher or people may believe that they have Christ in them will not work the results that they may suppose or desire. Many, and I may say the most, of these professing Christians, have ideas of what this expression means in order to become effective, that are not in accord with the true meaning of this condition of the soul. They believe that all that is necessary is to believe on Jesus as their Savior by His sacrifice and death, and that in so believing they have Christ in them, and that nothing else is required. They have no conception of the 634 distinction between Jesus, the man, and Christ, the Spirit of Truth, or more correctly, the Spirit that manifests the existence of the divine love in the soul. Christ is not a man in the sense that He is Jesus the Son of the Father. But Christ is that part of Jesus, or rather quality, that came to Him after He fully received into His soul the divine love, and was transformed into the very essence of the Father in His love. Christ is thus not a man, but as the manifestation of this love is bestowed upon Jesus, and made part of His very existence. And when men use the expression, having Christ in you, if they could correctly understand the true purport of the same, they would know that the expression means only that the divine love of the Father is in their souls. The indiscriminate use of the words Jesus and Christ is the cause of much misunderstanding among these Christians as to a number of the sayings of the Bible. Jesus became the Christ only because He was the first to receive into His soul this divine love and to manifest its existence, and this Christ principle is one that all men may possess, with the result that they will become at one with the Father in His substance of love and immortality. It would be impossible for Jesus, the man, to get into or become a part of any mortal, and it would be equally as impossible for Christ, as the man Jesus, even though perfect and free from sin, to become a part of anyone. No. The meaning of having Christ in you is to have this love of the Father in your soul, which can only be obtained through the working of the Holy Spirit as the instrument of the Father in bringing this love into the soul. To many who hear the preacher's exhortations in this particular, the expression is only a mystery, which they accept merely intellectually, and feel that by such acceptance they have the possession of this Christ, which is the only evidence of the truth of the Father's love. Good night. Your friend and brother, Jesus. March 10, 1918. I am here, John. I see that you are in a much better condition tonight, and that your soul is more in harmony with the spirits of the higher spheres, and we could write now, but your hand and arm are tired, and this is a matter that we always consider, and try not to cause you any unnecessary fatigue. The Paget Messages 1918, other spirits are here tonight, hoping that they might have written, but under the circumstances they will not. The Master is here also, and says that he will not attempt to write tonight as he intended, but will soon come and deliver a message. I am glad that you are feeling so much better spiritually and physically, and I feel that you will continue to do so. So pray more to the Father and turn your thoughts to spiritual things, and you will find a wonderful happiness that even the worries of your daily life cannot take from you. Question: No, emphatically, and those who believe that there ever lived such mortals are greatly mistaken. The highest of us spirits cannot know or foretell the future, in the sense in which the seers and prophets are supposed to have done in the centuries of which the Old Testament wrote. No man, whether in the flesh or in the spirit, ever has the omniscience of the Father, and to foretell what will happen centuries ahead is a power that belongs only to the Father. So that all the attempted application of prophecies as contained in the Bible to the happenings or future happenings of the present day are futile and without any justification. Man must depend upon the condition and acts of the state to determine what will happen in the short time that some expect the world to last. Comment by Paget: What a position for them to take, when we, who live so close to the Father, cannot possibly know. All this, of course, refers to the material affairs of men in their lives on earth. As to spiritual things, we can tell what the future of each man or nations of men will be, if certain conditions are observed or not observed. Well, I will write you on this subject when the opportunity presents itself. I will not write more now. With all my love and the blessings of the Father, I will say good night. Your brother in Christ, John. April 3, 1918. I am here, Ross Perry. I was at the seance tonight and talked to you and Middleton, and besides me there were Carrington and another spirit whom I did not know, named Silby, who had committed an act similar to my own. He was a very unhappy spirit, because he was in the same condition as when he first came to the spirit world, and has never had the benefit of the help that I received, and, consequently, knows nothing of the way in which he can find relief. But as I have met 635 him, I shall endeavor to help him and give him the benefit of my experience, and I think that he will listen to me. I have already told him of some of my experiences in progressing, and as he is like a drowning man willing to catch at any straw, I think he will be willing to listen to me, and probably act on my advice. Hutchins was also present, and he also is in a very bad condition and needs help very much, but I believe it will be more difficult to help him, because the sins of his earth life had a long continuous and accumulating acquirement. He is very dark and repulsive looking, and has not yet had any spiritual awakening. His thoughts and interests are still connected with the money that he left and the fight that is going on between his children and wife. He has attempted to discuss the matter with me just as he did on earth, but I tell him that he must forget these things and think of things that are more vital to his happiness and progress. But he says, he cannot, for as he loved the accumulation and possession of money while on earth, he still loves them, and as on earth they took the place of God, so now, he has no other God. It is very pitiable, and it seems as if it were not possible for him to get rid of his thoughts and desires with reference to these things, and it is hard to induce him to make the effort. When tonight he said he was happy, he only meant that he had that supposed happiness which he imagined he had on earth by reason of his love for these material things. I have observed frequently that spirits who are in a condition of darkness, with all their old loves and imagined happiness which they had on earth, say that they are happy, but it is not so, and they are merely without an awakening as to their true condition, which will surely come to them, sooner or later, and then they will see themselves as spirits in the more advanced condition see themselves to be. I want to say one other thing for the benefit of Middleton, and that is, that his father, whom I knew very well on earth, was with him, and was very anxious to talk to him, but he could not get the proper and sufficient rapport and strength to do so. Also, his wife was present, and desired so very much to make herself known to him, but for the same reason, as in the case of his father, she could not. But sometime she will be able to do so, if he will give her the opportunity, and he must do that, for it will make her very happy, and him also, if he will only believe that it is she who may appear. The Paget Messages 1918, to him and tell him of her being alive and with him so much, as she says she is. Well, I have written enough and must stop. Soon, I desire to write you a long letter about my own condition, if you can find time to receive it. With kind regards, I will say good night. Your true friend, R. Ross Perry. April 4, 1918. I am here, Mary Kennedy. I want to tell Leslie that Dr. Campbell is a wonderful spirit and they say a real physician who knows pretty much the condition of the sick. I am so glad that he came to my dear with his help, and I cannot tell him how glad I am and was when the doctor told him the other night of the great powers that could come to him in certain conditions. So tell Leslie that he must follow the doctor's advice and then he will see wonderful displays of the powers that come from the healing spirits that have been with Leslie a great deal for the past 4 days, while he attended the sick woman and I was trying my little mite to help him, though he did not need me for he had some very powerful spirit doctors with him. I realized it is a great thing to help the distressed, yet it is a greater thing to love you. For the sick may get well and must die at some time and disappear from his recollections, yet, his Mary can never die again and will always be a part, not only of his recollections but of his very being. I will not write more tonight as there are many spirits here who want to write and some of them will, so tell him to remember me in love and believe that I am with him almost constantly and loving him. But yet I am so selfish that I must come back to myself and tell him that in all his thoughts in reference to these matters of which I have just written, he must not forget me, for while it is a great thing to relieve the sick, yet as I have written, it is a great thing to love his Mary. With all my love I must stop and say good night. Mary. I am here, Kate Stone. I am here and want to write a line. I am the sister of Leslie and I desire to tell him that I have been with him quite often during the last 3 or 4 days. He may be somewhat surprised to learn that I have been present with Dr. Campbell while he has been watching the effect of his medicine upon the kidneys of my brother and of course was much interested, for as you may know it is a new 636 experience for us who are with him as it is for him, and he must not doubt what Dr. Campbell prescribed for him and has given his attention to the effect of the medicine so that as he says he may be able to give him advice as to what shall be done if anything else is necessary. I am pleased that Leslie can have the benefit of the help of Dr. Campbell, for I know that his advice is based upon his actual knowledge of conditions and not merely guesswork. And as I and the other spirit friends of my brother desire that he become a well man spiritually and also desire that he become well physically and remain so, and the doctor's advice is that Leslie must become free from any trouble with his kidneys and also will become strong otherwise. I cannot tell him how thankful we are that he has such a good advisor as to his physical condition. We, as we know, are anxious that he become perfectly whole in his physical and spiritual condition, and the combination of the two states of well-being makes for him a condition that will bring to him much material enjoyment and spiritual happiness. When we come to think of the wonders of these things, we cannot keep from being agreeably surprised, and I want to tell him that I know of no other mortals who are enjoying the advantages of having such unusual and believable help. We are very happy and progressing all the time and are doing a work that is very helpful to mortals. Our work is largely with mortals in the way of attempting to impress them with spiritual thoughts, and of course we are especially with our brothers and sisters, but this is not our only work, for the spirits in darkness are also the objects of our efforts and endeavors to help out of the sufferings. All send their love and earnest wishes for his progress in his soul development, which of course means a greater inflowing of the love. I will not write more now. So good night. With much love, his sister Kate. April 14, 1918. I am here, Spinoza. I desire to write a few lines, if you will permit. I need not say that I have never written you before, for you will know from the difficulty that I have in writing that such must be the case. No. I am a stranger to this method of communication, and to you, and to me it has come in very recent days as a wonderful revelation. I do not intend to write upon a subject of any great truth connected with our spirit life, but merely to say sufficient to introduce myself, in there, the Paget Messages 1918, hope that when I am better acquainted with the laws governing this method, I may be permitted to come to you and write of those things which I have learned since becoming a spirit, and which to learn when on earth would have been not only very desirable but very important. I was, when on earth, a philosopher, so called, and gave many years of my life to the search for truth relating not only to the natural world, but to what I conceived to be truth connected with that world or existence outside of and beyond the sense world, and in my researches I was guilty of many speculations which I now see have no foundation upon which I had built many conclusions and postulates.